Next case is 07-746, Dayton Bar Association versus Richard Hunter Rogers. Mr. Ambrose.
Good morning, Mr. Chief Justice, Justices. My name is Jim Ambrose, and it's my privilege and honor to represent Richard Rogers in this particular matter. We are the respondents, and this case is not as complicated as it may look at first blush. This is a case, clearly, of the panel not holding the relator to its burden of proving this matter beyond, I should say, by clear and convincing evidence. Richard Rogers has been an attorney for 43 years. He's been practicing in the state of Ohio, I believe, since 1989. In the year 2000, a matter came to his attention, and he handled that matter. Year 2007 was a hearing before the disciplinary council based on a complaint by the Dayton Bar filed in 2005. There's a lot of time here, and I understand that delay is important, but we could not show prejudice, as this court has restated several times. But it takes a long time to figure out what you did 5 and 6 years ago. This is the case of a 67-year-old attorney who took on four or five defendants, contractor, manufacturer, architect, and some others, and who subsequently returned to the client $18,400, or about 105 hours of work that he performed during that period of time. The Dayton Bar filed a complaint alleging several violations of DR 2, 1 and 1, 102, 102A, 3, and A4, clearly excessive fee, illegal conduct involving moral turpitude, engaging in conduct involving dishonesty, fraud, deceit, etc., and also one count of engaging in conduct that adversely affects upon the fitness of a lawyer to practice law, which was subsequently he was exonerated of. It's our position that the panel failed to do my client due process. They specifically stated at the hearing that they would listen to and read and view a perpetuation videotape deposition of the only individual, Attorney Ronald Burge, who reviewed the entire contents of my client's file. If you carefully read the decision recommendations of the panel, all 13 pages, you will not even see the word Ronald Burge mentioned. You will not see the word respondent's expert. You will not see any reference to Ronald Burge, who's a well-known Consumer Sales Practice Act attorney, who in fact reviewed the file completely, was deposed for hours by the DBA's counsel, the relator's counsel, and in fact found that no violation, felt that the work on a very complex case was in fact properly done, and we believe showed that it exonerated Mr. Rogers' alleged illegal actions.
Does a counsel ever have an obligation to tell a client that my fees are probably going to exceed the damages I can recover for you? I mean, they had allegedly about $50,000 in damages.
They did.
And the fees ended up being about $60,000. They would have been better off paying a contractor to get their problem fixed.
Sure.
They've ended up with no problem fixed and a $60,000 bill. Is there any ethical obligation to say to a client, you shouldn't pursue this case because I can't recover for you what's worthwhile?
There's no question that there is, if you know that. In this case involved a product called EFIS. It means an exterior insulating, I had to write this down, finishing systems. It's a siding on the side of a house, the synthetic stuff. And it wasn't designed very well back when this house was built by this retired couple. The gentleman was a chemist for the Miami Valley Regional Crime Laboratory in Dayton. It caused mold. They became dismissed. The clients became part of a class action suit, a national class action suit, which paid them $10,000, Justice. Subsequently, they came to Mr. Rogers and said, it's going to cost us $50,000 to fix this.
Okay, and assuming that, he didn't know how difficult the case would be, and assuming that he didn't know how expensive it would be to pursue it, at what point does he have an obligation to stop what he's doing? I mean, it sounds like from the findings that they didn't find out the fees were $60,000 until at the very end. There obviously was no regular billing, there was no advisement along the way what the fees were going to be or how much he was running up or anything like that. It was just, let's keep going, and at the end, here's the bill.
That is not what happened, certainly. I don't know where you may have read that, but the
document. That's on clearly that there paragraph were 32. Finding.
Your Honor, I can assure you, and the exhibits reflect all of his billings, which were made monthly. They knew it was going on. That is something
so
I
you,
didn't
you,
catch.
You assert that he did make monthly billings that showed how much was accumulating?
For a period of several years,
and we'll find that in the record.
Oh, yes. Okay. Yeah, actually, they're marked as exhibits.
Okay.
It got to a point after many, after about 14 months of him working on this case, that he brought in a co-counsel, an individual named Kozar, who he'd used in the past for about 16 or 17, 18 cases in the past. Richard has devoted most of his practice in the last four decades to construction. He and Kozar had some of a bond. They both graduated from Duke Law School, and they've used each other, bouncing things off for years, and Richard used Mr. Kozar. It got to a point where at the fourth mediation, remember, now, he had this case of 14 months. Kozar admits he has no idea, it's in the record, no idea of what Mr. Rogers did during his first year and 2 months that he, before he was brought into the case as trial counsel. Moreover, Richard had did extensive research. Number one, the first one is how do you get to be able to sue the manufacturer after you just accepted the $10,000 class action thing, which usually foregoes that ability, and to bring in not only consumer self-practice claim, but also negligence claim. He worked on that, and the Dayton Bar was very critical that he spent a number of hours on the complaint, and then they alleged somewhere like 40 hours when in reality it was close to 19 hours, and the panel acknowledged that. This was not a cookie-cutter complaint that was prepared. Many drafts were done, and the way he billed was what he referred to and Mr. Burge referred to as well as block billing. Worked on complaint. That doesn't mean he physically drafted, Your Honors, over the dictation machine or handwritten paragraphs of a complaint.
Well, let me just stop you there, because you mentioned Mr. Kozar, and it appears in the board's report that it relied, or the panel relied upon Mr. Kozar's testimony to make its conclusion against your client. Mr. Kozar ask how he could charge $60,000, and where are the records to Mr. Rogers, and Mr. Rogers got angry with him, and this is what the board finds, is it what, and we don't have the Dayton, unfortunately the Dayton Bar didn't file a brief, so we don't have a response, but it appears to me there's a real difference of opinion between what you have stated in your brief and what the board found based primarily upon, as I take it, primarily upon Mr. Kozar's testimony.
I can understand that, Your Honor. Let me point out to you that that complaint was filed, prepared, before Kozar ever entered the picture.
Yeah.
The panel accepted my client's explanation of what, quote, work on discovery meant. They were critical of the so-called 100 hours spent on discovery, when the Dayton Bar in and of itself said it was only 40 hours, and we, in fact, proved, we believe, sufficiently, that over a period of those number of years that he spent many hours less than that, close to, let me see if I'm not mistaken here, about 19 hours. And the reason why, when the discoveries, he literally went through with thousands of pages of literature and information on EFIS, this entire
He meaning Mr. Rogers.
Mr. Rogers, yes. Client. It wasn't just answering an interrogatory and preparing an interrogatory. It was more than that. He did not explain each detail very well. When it came to the fourth mediation, is when the bills came to light by Mr. Kozar, not knowing what, in fact, Richard had billed. Kozar testified, and I think the panel refers to it in its recommendation, that for every hour Mr. Kozar worked on this case, he got paid. He was never so-called cheated or held money back from him. He had no complaints about Richard in that case or in the previous 18 cases. When it got to the point where this, we are just overdoing this case, we're going to an MD for a haircut, frankly, we are spending much more time than this case is going to yield, was after a lot of work was done. And at that mediation is when they said, we need to come and help these clients. And Richard, in fact, did. At that point in time, he paid back to the Smiths via that mediation over $6,000. And Mr. Kozar about $850. Subsequently, after he thought this matter was done, that by the way, they did get $60,000 from the defendants, they were able to keep the $10,000, and they received other money from $800 from Kozar and over $6,000 from Mr. Rogers. A period of several months go by, Your Honor, I'm not certain if it's 9 months or a year, and they get this complaint from DBA filed by the Smiths, who, by the way, wrote a very nice thank you note after it was all over with, thanking him for all he did, and as well as Mr. Kozar, and said, frankly, didn't think this thing would take this much time. But they went to all separate counsel at Kozar's request. He called Richard, sent him a copy of a proposed complaint, and said, we think you ought to return more money, which he did.
How much
voluntarily,
more?
Voluntarily, $11,000 in addition. So it's a total of $18,400 he returned, or about 105 hours of work. And it was obviously to their satisfaction. They had separate legal counsel who reviewed that. A complaint is then subsequently filed after that time. We believe that the panel, number one, not only held the relator to the clear and convincing evidence burden, but also flat out missed several things, one of them being this issue on the expert. There's a discovery issue, there is a complaint issue, which they resolve in favor of my client. Then they talk about this expert. This expert is out of North Carolina. It's a Burek firm. These guys testify all over. They sent somebody, a representative from North Carolina to Dayton, Xenia area, as the bulldozer literally is at the house where he had teared down the siding. Don't do that until we get an expert. This guy was terrible. This guy didn't know what he was doing. I think his background was in bartending or something like that. He was not very good at the deposition, yet Richard felt, as lead counsel, and has had this case in the year 2000, that it was important, imperative, to keep an expert on board for the negligence claim as well as the consumer sales practice thing. They debated about that. The Smiths, the clients, were billed $3,100 by this expert. Richard made sure, and the panel was flat out wrong on this, made sure that money was never paid. He worked an additional 5.5 hours negotiating with them, telling them why they were not very good, and charged them about $900 or $1,000 for that the clients paid,
so
not $3,100.
To get specific so that we can come to some conclusion on this, paragraphs 19 through 22, I guess, of the finding of the board indicates Kozar saying that he did all this work and your client sat by, didn't change any of the documents that Kozar prepared. And essentially, you get the impression from the panel's recommendation that Kozar did the work and your client was there but didn't do much work. But yet your client billed the Smiths a good bit of money.
I understand what you're saying. What in fact took place is that my client did do much work, in particular in the discovery aspect.
But he couldn't seem to document it in the panel.
Exactly. He did drafts of documents. He had research. And who produces those 3 and 4 years after the fact? Frankly, I've been doing this not as long as Richard, but in 33 years I've been practicing law as an alleged litigator, I don't keep drafts of documents. They are, in fact, drafts.
Did he have documentation of his hours that he spent on the matter? Or not?
Yes, they were billed, as I indicated earlier, monthly, and Richard's hours were billed there as well as Kozar's were billed there when he changed his billing system. Kozar got paid for every hour that he worked, and his hours were
billed. Did he have copies of the answers to interrogatories and the documents he claims he prepared, were there copies of those that he submitted?
He being Richard?
No.
Kozar?
Kozar.
Yes. Oh, yeah, we're not saying Kozar didn't do the work. Kozar did the work, and he had copies. Those are the ones that were used. He ran them past Richard for a review. Richard, frankly, was very comfortable with what he had and was better than what he had drafted a year or so earlier.
So you're claiming your client prepared complaints and interrogatories and lots of documents, but didn't keep any of them and didn't use them in the litigation and used Kozar's?
With regard to the complaint, my client drafted the complaint, redid it, and the one that, in fact, was filed was only done by my client.
But all this discovery, he has no proof of it.
We had a banker box, literally, as I referred to in a report, of documents, many memos and emails, but did not keep drafts of documents that were subsequently never used. And then somehow, apparently, they're very critical of that. Richard was unable to produce that. When the client was made whole, and he had clearly, to this day, we tried to resolve this several times, and I noticed the sanction is over $7,000. Basically, his Dayton Bar Association was not able to go forward on two occasions. So that's what we are addressing with this honorable court today. Anything further, Your Honors? I see a little light's going off here. So.
That means your time has expired.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Mr. Ambrose. Dayton Bar has not submitted a brief, so they waive all argument. The case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion.